120-21. But today, as we welcome in Parker Gabriel from the Lincoln Journal Star, PG, good Wednesday afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
Good. If you got a ticket, regardless of your political affiliation, would you go to the inauguration?
Oh, yeah. I think, I think any American who had a chance to be there to see something like that, regardless of your own political affiliation or whatever you think, and regardless of who it is that's being inaugurated,
yeah,
I think it'd be an amazing thing to see in person.
It's weird to see today that, you know, because of the situation, we don't have massive crowds there. But yeah, this is we've done it. This is the 46th president. It's a big day. We've done play by play all day on this. So if we have to break in and, you know, do some play by play, we will.
Perfect.
Yeah, we're being sarcastic. So the NFL deadline to put your name into the draft has come and gone. How would you assess Ohio State's reaction to, I know Justin Fields was going, but there's a couple of guys that are staying.
Yeah, they've had some sizable names decide to come back. I know there's some other guys. I think maybe it was Wyatt Davis and Josh Myers. Either both of them went, at least one of them did. But getting Chris Olave back and then getting Haskell Garrett back, I mean, remember all the way back to October 24th, which seems like a long time ago, first game of the season for Nebraska, mm-hmm, and for Ohio State. And the people that cover the Buckeyes really didn't think that Haskell Garrett was going to be available to play in that game because he'd been shot in the face in the offseason. Mm-hmm. And not only did he play, but he was really good. I mean, Nebraska ran the ball at Ohio State, and he was really the one guy on that defensive line that gave Nebraska a lot of problems. And so, to get him back, to get Olave back, obviously, you know, you're going to have a new quarterback stepping into that situation. But holy cow, I mean, talk about a good set of weapons. You know, obviously Trey Sermon left, but man, there's an incredible amount of talent still in that receiver room, and the Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson led room will ride again in 2021.
How much of a, you know, and they, I'm you know, depending on what they have at running back currently on the roster, they've had success with the portal. Maybe they dip into the portal again for a running back. Northwestern got a quarterback yesterday out of the portal. I mean, no doubt that Ramsey was a key cog in their success this past season. And I think when you have success with somebody out of the portal, you're attractive to other players at that specific position that can say, hey, man, if I go there, they're going to coach me up. How do you think Ryan Helinski will adjust from South Carolina to Northwestern, where I think, doesn't he walk in, Parker, and he's maybe 1A or 1B on their depth chart?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so with Peyton Ramsey leaving there, and so he's going to have a great chance to win the job. You know, I don't. To be honest with you, you know, he's been a couple of places. I think a lot of people know the family's story. You know, with the Helinskis, but I don't know all that much about him as a player in terms of, you know, exactly what his strengths are. I think we saw with Northwestern that they were able to take a big step forward with Peyton Ramsey and what they could do offensively. You know, there's some guys that have left now. You know, a couple of running backs leave. Obviously, the guy that's back is that freshman that sort of emerged as their guy as the season went along. You know, you've had some other players hit the portal on the offensive side of the ball at Northwestern, you know, outbound. And so it'll be interesting to see what their skill looks like going into 2021. But you're right. I think when you have a success in the portal, you know, especially at quarterback, not only are players attracted, but then you tend to think it's, you know, natural to think, hey, we can find another guy that can work. And we've seen, obviously, there's examples like Oklahoma where it's, mm-hmm, worked, you know, multiple years in a row. But there is always a risk factor in that and having a first-year guy. So I'm very interested to see how that all plays out.
Your thoughts on Jonathan Rutledge and his brief time at Nebraska and why it didn't work out, and what lesson maybe Scott Frost has learned from that year that he might apply to the next move?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's interesting that he told The Athletic that philosophically they didn't quite line up. Obviously, there were challenges in the setup, but everybody involved knew what the challenges were getting in, where he was an analyst and he couldn't coach, you know, players directly in practice or on game days. And so, you know, you can say, yeah, that's a tough spot to be in, but that's what everybody signed up for in the situation. So that setup isn't all on him, obviously, but that was what they wanted to try to do. I guess I'll be interested to see, you know, how they go about setting it up this year, if it's similar or if they shift some duties around on the staff and sort of go back to similar to the way it was before, where you have an assistant coach who sort of oversees it, and maybe they've got analyst help then, as Joe Von DeWitt did the first 2 years. And so there's a lot of different ways you can do it. And then I guess the other way to think about it is with Jonathan Rutledge. I mean, it was reported, we reported on it, I think everyone reported on it. You know, there were several other guys, they talked to a lot of people about that job, and a couple of them, you know, got, you know, Sean Snyder ended up getting a full-time staff job, which of course, you know, most people are going to take over an analyst job. And so the next thing is, if there's a guy you want and there's a guy you really believe in, you've got to find a way to get him, right? And that's nothing against Jonathan Rutledge. Just we know that there were other people in that picture before they got to him. So that's not rocket science. If you can find a setup that you really believe is going to work, and you can find a guy that's at the top of your wish list in terms of people to do it, then that puts you in the best position for success.
I mean, if you continue to go with the analyst role and not a full-time, and as you were alluding to, Jonathan Rutledge talked to Mitch at The Athletic and gave us a little bit of insight. I mean, how do you overcome the fact that you're not on the field with those guys? Those are not your guys that you're in with while they're in a position group, and so you know them really well. You're kind of from afar saying, okay, can you bring them down here so I can use them now? How do you make that dynamic work when it didn't work this past year? And in some cases, it hasn't. It doesn't always work out.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the thing that will be interesting, and I'm sure that this is part of the decision, you know, to make, is did it not work because of the structure itself? Did it not work because of the person you had in that role? Or did it not work because it just was something about the way that the structure was carried out? Which, I mean, I think the main thing there would be communication, right? Like, you can't coach it on the field during practice or in games. And so even if you have the best strategy involved, it's got to be communicated through the coaching staff at some point, especially on game day. And so to me, like, we've got part of the answer in the simple fact that they're looking for somebody else. And then the next part of that is, you know, if you really honestly believe that setup or something similar can work, if you have a better communication structure from a senior special teams analyst through the coaching staff to the players, then, hey, if you believe that and you want to go for it, great. We'll see how it works. We'll see if there can be a big jump there. But if direct contact, you know, with the person who's running special teams and the players on a daily basis on the practice field and on game days is central to it, then, you know, that person's got to be on the staff, you know, if you're doing it above board.
Why do you think there's, you know, I remember we had this discussion when Alante Brown committed to Nebraska, and we saw some of his film, and it included him being a returner. We thought, oh, there's the guy. Why do you think Nebraska they can't lock on to specific guys to return punts or kicks?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, they've had a couple of good ones. You know, Cam Taylor-Britt, I thought, did a nice job returning punts. He obviously misplayed one in a big situation. But he showed the ability to create big plays in the return game. They obviously had a good one with Jaden Spielman, particularly in the punt return. I know his last year, his junior year, the numbers weren't quite as good. I think, you know, he had a touchdown and then it wasn't much else outside of that. But I'm not really sure on that. I mean, you've got to have a guy who has a good feel for it, but you've got to have the blocking and the scheme nailed down too. I mean, there's nobody, unless another team, which there just aren't many teams that are going to flat, you know, blow assignments in the Big Ten in the return game. And so unless you've got, unless a team makes a catastrophic mistake, you are just, you have to have the guys that can go out there and create an opening and create a seam and get guys out of their lanes without committing penalties. And so I don't really know enough to know if that was happening and Alante Brown or whoever else has been over the past couple of years just hasn't seen it, or if there's just really not much room to go. And when you combine that with the, you know, just the number of times you've been caught in between on fair catch or bring it out, so to, you know, and if you're going to bring it, you got to at least get to the 25, because otherwise you're just giving away yards. And that's just been a tough thing to get going. Nebraska hasn't been able to do it consistently.
Early enrollees are here, and that's a big chunk of this recruiting class, and it's just Nebraska's finally caught up to the trend around college football where there are, you know, a lot of schools have double-figure enrollees. I think Nick Saban alluded to it maybe a year ago. One of the things that's helped them is they have this great class they sign, but a majority of them get here, so they're, you know, a half year ahead of other players that are coming in late or other programs. So Nebraska's got, you know, an abundance of high school guys and the three transfers that are in. As you look and kind of in your head, you know what spots there's going to be good competition for in the spring leading into the season. What do you think some of the early enrollees that will benefit by being here so that they can go through winter conditioning and go through spring ball before the rest of the class joins them?
You know, it's interesting. Obviously, they all do. And I think we talk a lot about the guys who we think might have an opportunity to see the field early, and with good reason, right? I mean, the names that come to your mind right away are guys like Thomas Fedoni, guys like Gabe Irvin, the running back, you know, guys like Marquise Buford in the defensive backfield. But I think, and I haven't talked to a lot of people about this, at least not recently, but I think it really does a lot of good for the guys up front. You know, you just don't necessarily see the payoff right away. Mm-hmm. But that extra, you know, time in the weight room, you know, starting right now, getting on the college meal plan right away, the training table, all of the stuff that goes into that, like, I think it benefits Teddy Prochazka and Henry Letovsky and Branson Yeager and Raquan Buckley as much as anybody, because those guys have the longest developmental arc typically, you know, before you're physically ready to get on the field. And so those 6 months or 5 months that you're going through that process, that can make the difference between, you know, not necessarily being ready to go out and play against Illinois in week zero. If, like, let's say you're Henry Letovsky, who knows, maybe he'll, you know, work his way into consideration inside. Maybe he won't as a freshman, but, you know, even still, I mean, if you're accelerating that track by 5 months, maybe that's the difference of being ready when you're a redshirt freshman physically, or maybe that's the difference of being ready as a sophomore compared to being a junior. And so I think it makes as big a difference for the big guys up front as it does for anybody.
How important was it to get Torre and Step, knowing that they can come in now? You don't have to wait, because, you know, there's, you know, Nebraska had to wait on Manning. They had to wait on Mills from junior college. You know, they weren't in early. They were in the middle of the summer. How much of a benefit or, you know, a consideration to continue the conversation for Nebraska that both of those guys are here right now? You don't have to wait on them at two positions where there's some open spots.
Yeah, they've had to wait on, I mean, if you look at the numbers, they've had to wait on almost every running back for sure until this year. And the vast majority of their wide receivers that they've brought into the program, besides Wando Robinson and Chris Hickman, I think, most of them have been summer enrollees. So it's a huge difference, you know, to get Marquis Stepp and Samari Touré. And you can put Gabe Irvin in that conversation too. And, you know, Thomas Fedoni and James Carney at tight end, all those guys to have that kind of those numbers of skill, you know, player additions to the group, but in particular, like you're saying, the older guys, the two transfers, it makes a big difference because those are guys who, like Samari Touré and Marquis Stepp, those are guys you brought in because, you know, you think they can play right away and you need them to play in year one, you know. And of course, like everybody, though, you hope that they're better players, you know, by the end of the season than they were right at the beginning. But for them, you know, especially for Samari Touré, he's got 1 year of eligibility. I mean, that the 5 months between now and when some of the other guys will arrive in May, I mean, that's almost half the time he's going to be in Lincoln. So you're really gaining, you know, relatively speaking, what you can get with Samari Touré and what he can get from Nebraska by him being here right away. And then with Marquis Stepp, you know, it's just about different style of offense than he's been in college so far at USC. And so just a chance to sort of get him up to speed and see what he can do and get him tuned up for a regular season.
So you've got two tight ends that are here early, and one of them is expected to play right away in an already deep tight end room. You've got wide receivers that are back from last year, and you know, you got three wide receivers that will not be enrolling early. And I look at the in my head the depth chart at both of those positions. What's a Chris Hickman spring have to look like for him? Because he seems like a guy that he's on the travel roster, but he's not on the field. But when you have seen him on the field, he's teased you enough. What do you think a spring has to look like for him?
Well, I think it's twofold. I mean, he of course will do well to continue making progress and being able to do as many things as he can and learning as much of the, you know, route tree, whether he's playing receiver or tight end and all of that, and continuing to get bigger and stronger and all of that. And, you know, I mean, offenses aren't typically built around individual players, but they're tailored to players that can do different things. And I think, you know, if you look at the best offenses out there, they find ways to put the guys that they've got in positions to be successful. And I think, you know, I'm not calling for an overhaul of the offense for Chris Hickman by any means, but, you know, I think I would be interested to see how many different positions they can put him in to do the things he's good at. And so far, for the most part, that's included blocking. I mean, he's just been a willing guy. He's willing to go stick his nose in there against bigger guys. You know, it'd be interesting to see him lined up in the slot and blocking guys in the middle of the field. It's interesting, you know, they used him as sort of a motion guy, that sort of move player, H-back type. Like, there's a lot of teams in college and in the NFL that even if they don't typically employ a true fullback, that's sort of become a valuable piece, you know, on the football field, even in, you know, quote-unquote modern or cutting-edge offenses. And so, to me, I think some of it is Chris Hickman just continuing to, you know, improve himself and what he's capable of doing on the field. And I think part of it is on, you know, the offensive coaches to take a guy who is a unique player. You know, he hasn't shown to be an overwhelming one or a guy that you absolutely have to have involved. But to find a guy who has sort of a unique skill set on your roster and figure out ways to use him effectively.
How much time does Thomas Fedoni this spring spend being instructed by Matt Lubick as the wide receiver coach?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it'll be both kind of similar to the way that we saw multiple coaches sort of, you know, getting time with Wandell Robinson pretty much from right away when he got to campus 2 years ago in the effort to get him ready to do multiple things on the field. I think you'll see the same with Thomas Fedoni, and that obviously comes from, you know, Matt Lubick and Sean Beckton and Scott Ross and whoever else. So I think he'll spend a good amount of time, you know, with Lubick but certainly, you know, the staff obviously has a ton of trust. And I think Thomas Fedoni has a really good relationship with Sean Beckton and his ability to teach, you know, not just the tight end role itself, but the finer details of being a receiver and of being a threat in the passing game.
Well, you think about the options, what you do with that position. I mean, you've already got Austin Allen, who was one of the most targeted receivers you had. Travis Vokolek with another year. I mean, we kind of know what he can do. I mean, are we looking at two tight end sets, possibly, PG, but not the two tight end sets that we grew up with that were all about blocking, that you could play with Austin or Allen and Fedoni on the field at the same time, and both of those guys are more known for their pass catching?
Yeah. I mean, we could get kind of nuts, but we could see some 13. You know, let's see three on the field at one time. But you know, I think that's I would just say like that's sort of, it's a similar conversation with Fedonia, honestly, as it is with Hickman. They're just different skill sets.
Yep.
And they're obviously at different points in their college career, but, you know, find ways to use those guys. And just because you put Thomas Fedonia or Chris Hickman on the field doesn't mean you have to necessarily take Austin Allen or Travis Vokolek off. You just have to show within those groups that you can put them on the field and not be predictable, right? So that's really what it is. But you might, you know, I mean, you might be able to dictate more. You might be able to put defenses in an uncomfortable position in terms of the personnel groups that they want to play. If you can use those guys in different ways, you know, are you going to play base and have a linebacker responsible for Austin Allen or Thomas Fedonia or whoever it is, right? So there's all kinds of, you know, chess pieces on the football field come in different shapes and sizes, and it's really, offense these days is really about maximizing, you know, how many different ways you can use each of your different players.
Well, and look at the evolution of the tight end position in the NFL and college. I mean, we just saw the playoff where you had four teams that the kind of tight end they have playing is that hybrid tight end. I think there's a revolution in college football. He's an NFL guy, so, you know, you're not going to throw a lot of people into his category. But Kyle Pitts at Florida, I think, is possibly where that position is going in college.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, there's when you have big, you know, dynamic athletes like Kyle Pitts, obviously, you know, you are going to use him the same way at the NFL, you know, with guys like Travis Kelce and George Kittle and all of that. And then, you know, like, I've watched the Packers pretty close, and they got four tight ends they use regularly through games, even with a third rounder from a couple of years ago out with an injury, and another third rounder from this year out with an injury. So they're rolling, you know, Mercedes Lewis is pretty much strictly blocking with a stray catch here and there. And then they've got a 6'2" guy named Dominique Daphne, who's undrafted from Indiana State, that they figure out stuff to do with him too. So, you know, it just doesn't, you can use players of all different types of, you know, sizes and skill sets and all of that. And you just have to be creative about how you do it. And you have to put guys in position where you're asking them to do things that, you know, are their strong suit.
Great stuff. Good luck to your Packers on Sunday.
Same to the Chiefs.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. PG, have a good week.
Gotcha.
And so Parker Gabriel. All right. We'll have a little, there we go. This is the Packers Chiefs.
Yeah. Huh. Let's speak it into existence. Let's make it happen.
You just keep talking there, George. I'm more confident about your team than my team, but that's okay. Mahomes practiced today.
He sure did.
We're good. All right. Big thanks to everybody that tuned in on a Wednesday. Enjoy Creighton and Providence tonight. That's a big game for Providence. It's also a bounce back game for Creighton to exert their will. As we get closer to what we all want is the first matchup between Creighton and Villanova, which is still a few weeks away, almost a month away. But that game's coming up at 6, of course, USC with Bischel. We'll have more on that. Big thanks to Scott Shanley for giving us Philip Rivers' story time. Everybody that chimed in on the mailbag, congratulations to our winner of the Oscars Pizza and Wings gift card, and to Parker Gabriel. All of the segments are up on the radio replay page. I believe that as a tribute to Philip Rivers retiring today after 17 years, George has the segments today broken up into 9. 1 through 9 to match all of Philip Rivers' kids.
Oh, that's good.
Is Philip Rivers Catholic? I mean, it used to be the deal. Yeah. I mean, my mom was from a family of 12. And then she had mom and dad.
Good point.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you're sitting in a Catholic church. I remember watching families walk in, and they kept walking in and walking in and walking in. All right. That's up on the radio replay page at the Gary Sharp Show tab at 1620 The Zone. Have a great rest of the day. Enjoy it. The weather is beautiful here in the Big O on this historic day. We're back with you tomorrow at 10. We'll talk to USC coming up next on the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.